Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the misfits, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the biggest rule breakers in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about the wildest moments, toughest lessons, and why breaking the rules might just be the key to success. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
The Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Derek and Zach. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
Good morning, everybody.
What's up? What's
up? Happy Monday. Beautiful outside.
It's all right.
The pads are on. The pads are on.
I'm ready to like go to a store, buy some pads, and like Zach and I can do the Oklahoma drill in the hallway.
I am super unprepared for that.
Why? You could shake me.
Not a shot.
You can't juke me?
We were literally
talking about how there's no room in the hallway to shake someone.
Yeah, I'm not what I'd call athletic.
There's 9 bills hurt. I don't need to be a 10th. That's going to happen to me, and I'm not willing to do that.
Come on, man.
I'm not willing to do
that.
Put
the body on the line.
Because then I got to go to the hospital, and they're like, what happened?
Hospital?
Oklahoma drill.
Hospital? I'm not that good at anything, dude. As a matter of fact, there's a better chance on the record of me having to go instead of you.
Mm-mm, my body will break.
Josh saw it.
My body will break. Good morning, everybody. Happy Monday. Bills are, of course, at training camp. We will be hearing from Bills head coach Sean McDermott. He spoke during the 9 o'clock hour when Jeremy and Joe had offensive coordinator Joe Brady on. But first, we go to the West Her Hotline and get our day started talking to the one and only Sal Capaccio, who is live down at training camp. Sal, good morning. How are we doing today?
Good morning. Let's see if you can hear this. Ready? Here we go. You hear that? Hear that noise?
I'm hearing people hitting people.
Yeah.
People hitting pads getting ready to hit people. That's the sled. That's a good old-fashioned sled right there, boys.
Yeah,
sled. It is pads time. In fact, they're going to be hitting each other here in a little while.
Yeah, and you know, that's kind of like that extra sign of like how it feels more real. We heard Joe Brady talking about that when he was on with Jeremy and Joe. There's always that excitement, Sal, of really being able to add that physicality to the practice. You know, you're getting a little back and forth with players now, facing the same guys every now and then. So I'd imagine tensions might rise a little bit because you're going to start hitting people. It is going to start having that extra physical tension, so to say, to a practice that might make some tempers flare every now and then.
Sure, and that's going to happen. Sean McDermott said today, he's like, I'm not sitting here and say I'm against fights or for fights. Like, that's just things happen in practice, and you're going to have them once in a while as long as they're not cheap shots, and you have to have respect for another man's career. That's what he cares about. So, yeah, that'll happen, especially on a hot day today, like today. But, you know, listen, the bottom line is to get your job done. The bottom line is to work. It's not to be fighting against somebody. It's not to be, you know, tempers flaring and all that. The bottom line is to do your job in every play, get back in the huddle, do your job in the next play, and that's what they're out here for.
All right, so Sal, outside of it being the first day of pads, although what did they have on yesterday? Like they had like the shell or like part of it. Today's the first full day of pads.
The first day of pads. Yesterday they had shells on, but I'm looking to make sure they have pads with pants with pads in them today and helmets and shoulder pads.
Okay. But outside of that being maybe the biggest storyline of today, the second or even maybe the first is the injury list continues to grow for the Bills. 9 players now. Dalton Kincaid added today. Tyrell Shavers, it seems to be good news for him, but he's still not practicing. It's a long list, 9 guys.
Yeah, we have Dorian Williams is still out. He was injured the other day. I think it was his calf, if I remember correctly. Tyrell Shavers should be okay after that, what looked like a pretty bad injury, but it's not going to be too serious. Sean McDermott thinks he'll get him back in a couple of days. Cedric Grandparent Granger remains on the PUP list. He's out. Curtis Samuel and Terrell Bernard both have hamstring injuries. Elijah Moore not practicing today, a general soreness. Dalton Kincaid, knee soreness, so that's not great to read and see. Dawson Knox was activated off the non-football injured list yesterday, but he will not practice today yet, not quite there. Tyler Bass has pelvis soreness, the way he described it. Caden Prather has a hamstring injury, and Spencer Brown still has his back injury. So, yeah, quite a list of players. They did get Laviska Shenault back. They do get Taron Johnson back after a vet rest day. And They did get AJ Epenesa back the other day as well, I think over the weekend. It's the first time I talked to you guys since then. Josh Allen now going to the other field, waving, and you hear all the fans.
There we go, and we are off. Sal, from this weekend, I know a big storyline a lot of people were talking about, too, just from what I saw at least yesterday, Keon Coleman really having kind of – he's growing, it seems like, as camp has gone on. Maybe not the greatest start you'd want to see, but yesterday he's got the play of the Bills tweet out, you know, every day, and it seemed like he really is starting to find his groove as we're getting into pads.
Yeah, I'm sorry. You're talking about Keon Coleman? I lost you for a second there. Yep. You mentioned Keon Coleman, right? Yeah, for sure. I think he's had a – really good trajectory here over the first few days. He's gone kind of the first day a little bit non-existent. Second day, he started to show up. And then I think by the third day, he started to really get involved. Yesterday, I thought it was his best day whatsoever overall. So, yeah, I think Keon Coleman's on a really nice trajectory here the way that he's been participating.
What else have you seen from practice? I know guys like Dorian Strong as well has been getting a lot of headlines as someone that looks like the quote-unquote NFL corner. That's something me and Derek, I know we've talked to you about as, you know, when Bean selects a corner in late rounds of the draft, you somewhat have to pay attention. They have been very good at nailing these guys late in the rounds, and he seems to be somebody as well
I'm gay.
That people are very excited to see in pads because that maybe is where his game goes.
Yeah, guys, there's a lot of noise around me here. Can you just tell me who you were just talking about again?
Dorian Strong.
Dorian Strong.
Yeah. So Dorian Strong has had a really good camp so far. He looks the part of an NFL cornerback. He really looks like an NFL corner. And at times you'll see him playing like an NFL corner, meaning getting physical. Let me tell you the play that he had the other day. It was great. And then there was the good and the bad of, you know, camp and being a rookie. I actually happened to be focusing on him. And just randomly I was saying, I'm going to watch Dorian Strong this play. And sure enough, this particular play, he drops into zone. He lets his guy kind of go to the next zone. And then he wheels his head around and sees the ball being thrown underneath. Does a great job to just kind of attack it and come downhill, which is great. Well, the ball gets caught. And after it does, Dorian Strong, peanut punch, forces a fumble. Like, all right, like here we go. This is great. A little bit later, Dorian Strong is on Keon Coleman. They're jostling down the field, like stride for stride, step for step. And Coleman did a great job on a great throw to just get his hands up at the right time to high point it right over top of him. And I think Dorian Strong's like, man, what do I got to do? That is the ups and downs of an NFL rookie in training camp. But I really like overall the camp that Dorian Strong has put together.
Sal, looking around all of camp up to this point with pads going on today, who's the player through the first, what has it been, four or five practices that maybe has caught your eye the most?
Ooh, it's a good question. I guess for different reasons we can go with different guys. I think Max Harrison has flashed for sure because he's Max Harrison, though, and not necessarily because he's done anything great or bad or anything like that. I'm going to say maybe Matt Milano because I'm fascinated by him right now. I'm fascinated by where he is in his career coming off his injuries that he's had, the fact that he's, you know, 31 years old and still able to play at a really high level. If he's healthy, is he going to stay healthy? Because he looks really good out here. Like, that's a guy that's really kind of caught my eye a little bit out here. And I'll say for a different reason, Deion Walker, he's just massive. He's so big. It's crazy.
Yeah, that seems to be his thing. I mean, what did Ed Oliver call him? A dancing bear?
Yeah, something like that,
just
right?
Unbelievable.
I know.
Sal, when it comes to reps, everything like that, one of the bigger questions still being about like watching the safety position, more in particular Cole Bishop. How's he been looking so far with Taylor Rapp? Because I remember I did see that Sean McDermott was talking about the rapport that the two of them are trying to establish.
Yeah, he said he's looked good. He's done a good job. And that is so important with those two guys with the rapport they have to establish. So no doubt about it, he is kind of fitting in exactly how they want it. I've always said, guys, as long as Cole Bishop stays healthy, this is his job. It's his job to lose. The only way he can lose it is A, if he's not available, or B, if something goes drastically wrong as he's trying to win that job. But I think Cole Bishop has looked really good so far, and I like the camp he's putting together. And what Sean McDermott said really reinforces the things that we can't see about Cole Bishop, which is how he's working in tandem, you know, with Taylor Rapp, which is great.
All right, Sal, we'll let you get back to practice day one of pads. If anything big happens, you know where to find us.
Yeah, for sure. I'll be here, guys. I'm just going to walk over right now, get some shots of the defense working. So look forward on some video over at Sal Sports on X.
Enjoy the sights, the sounds.
That was Sal Capaccio there on the West Hur Hotline. Coverage of Bills training camp from St. John Fisher University is brought to you by Fiegel Carr & Joy, Shore Border Attorneys, by Outlet Liquor. When you need to stock up, it's the place to buy a case. What's your outlet? By Connors & Ferris, your workers' comp attorneys, and driven by your upstate Honda dealers. For great deals on the entire Honda lineup, visit your upstate Honda dealer today. So, yes, day one of pads is underway. There were some scuffles, it looked like, before the weekend on Friday. We will, of course, listen back to Bills head coach Sean McDermott at 10:30, one of those guys being Alec Anderson. It appeared he threw him out of practice on Friday, that he was brought up when he was talking with the media. That is something that I think all of us kind of like almost prepare for, like as camp goes on. It's like, when is the first big fight? When is when everyone got to get, you know, separated? I saw yesterday on Twitter, Derek, someone mentioning 2022 when Josh Allen got involved. And I remember that. I hadn't thought about that in a while, but I remember when that happened. And I was like, oh, yeah, I remember my heart dropped because I was like, dude, get him out of there. What is he doing? And then what is happening?
Then after practice, there was more scuttlebutt going on while Allen's talking to the media, and he just did the dad voice thing. Hey.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
I forgot about that part.
No, that one was – that's memorable, the Josh Allen dad voice.
But, I mean, that is a thing, too. Like, camp does not go on nearly as long as it used to. There used to be two-a-days, and it, you know, it was a grind. And that, I would imagine, for the players was awful. I mean, it's shorter now. I mean, we're getting to a point, too, where they leave St. John Fisher to go back home. They go back to Buffalo, and they start working there and all that stuff. There also isn't the cut-down days that we used to have. If anyone's been watching old Hard Knocks,
and you want
to have those. That was tough.
You want to talk about tension. Mm-hmm. Ooh, that's tension, because that's the first wave of cuts. You want to make sure you're trying to survive to the next opportunity.
I have been watching those older Hard Knocks, and it's been a while since we've had cut down days. Now it's the last day, which I do prefer, to be perfectly honest. But that was a thing, too, where, yeah, like they got to the first round, and you're just like, oh, like everyone has that same sort of feeling of dread. So you're right, like it'll ramp up the tension. But this is exciting. I mean, this is for a lot of people, like this is when camp really gets underway.
You could also just focus on it throughout until the last day. So at that point, you still have a chance.
Rather than worrying, like, fighting. I hope I get to Friday kind of deal.
Right. You don't have to worry about the first wave of cuts or making sure that you're getting out there to have more games. Yeah. That first wave of cuts happens, there's still more preseason to play.
Yeah, absolutely. And then that was a big thing why, like, the starters played week three. And then it was like, okay, everyone else, you're playing week four. Like,
yep.
We're not dealing with this. The long list of injuries, though, going into today, it is 9 players. Dorian Williams, Tyrell Shavers, Cedric Grandpran, Granger, Curtis Samuel, Terrell Bernard, Elijah Moore, Dalton Kincaid, Dawson Knox, Tyler Bass, Caden Prather, and Spencer Brown. We were talking about it before we jumped on air. Most of those names are guys that you're going to want on Sunday.
They're guys that you want on Sundays. And the operative word for me, I'm not concerned. I'm annoyed.
It's annoyed.
Like, and the thing that I'm annoyed about is just luck. There's nothing to it. It's not like these players aren't doing what they need to do to protect their bodies. It's just plays are happening. And, you know, sometimes you're working out and something's just irritating you, or you're getting a rep in and a muscle doesn't cooperate with what you wanted to do. It's the human body. It's luck. It's annoying. Mm-hmm. It's annoying. That's all it is. It's just something where I'm like, can we not? And that's it. I'm not worried, not concerned. The team doesn't sound overly concerned on a lot of these. So I'm more or less at, can we just not? Please, yeah, thank you, you're welcome.
That's a really good part, is that the team doesn't sound overly concerned for the most part. I mean, I know I saw a quote from McDermott today where he was just like, it's not ideal.
Yeah, it's
which,
not
of
ideal.
Of course, your two starting tight ends are down. Two of your kind of rotational slot receivers are down. Your starting right guard is down. Your backup set, like, you know, right? But I do look at also stuff like this. Like, Curtis Samuel picked up a hamstring injury over the weekend, and kind of the thought was, ooh, this maybe is going to be a moment Elijah Moore can really start to establish himself with the ones. He goes down with something. You know, the two tight ends, Knox and Kincaid, both go down. Now, you could look at that as a huge bonus for some of the younger guys that can maybe start to gather reps, because they'll have to be with the ones. But it's not great. It's just, I think you're right. The operative word is annoying, but you do hope that eventually some of these guys start to get activated.
Right.
That has been true for some of these guys, but they're slow playing it. Knox, I think, is one of them.
Knox was
he's been activated. But
Chenault was activated.
Right. So that seems to be all in all good. it's just not ideal. They have not had any of the big injuries that we've been seeing around the NFL, which is obviously a bonus. I know one of the rookies for Tampa Bay, Walker, he's out for the season with a torn ACL. Cowboys guard broke a bone in his neck. There are far worse situations you can be in. Don't get me wrong. But as the season is ramping up, you want everyone there. You want at least most of them there. And you look around, it's a ton of starters. I mean, that's really what it is. It's a ton of starters and key backups. Because Dorian Williams may not be a starter. He's a key backup. You know, Cedric Van Pran Granger may not be the starting center, but he's a key backup.
Right. And, again, this is a list of players that maybe outside of, like, what, one or two of them on your wide receiver depth that might still end up on practice squad anyway. Again, these are guys that you want on Sundays. You want to make sure, hope that there's nothing nagging going into the year because at that point, buckle up.
Yep. 803-0550, the number to call if you want to jump on the show. Though, do want to mention now, with full pads getting underway, this is a spot now, kind of from here on, where we'll actually be able to really get an idea of how good some of these guys have been performing. It's been nice to hear that Coleman is having better and better and better days as camp has gone on. Josh Palmer, his seems to be his connection and his chemistry with Allen seems to be getting better. TJ Sanders and Deion Walker, I've heard very good things from pretty much everyone that's covering camp. But now the pads go on. Now it kind of starts to get going for these guys.
We can get another evolution into the good things that we're hearing, though. That's the other part of this. You can hear more about this, especially with a physical receiver like Keon or the defensive tackles or a player that scouting reports say that was a man-heavy type player in Dorian Strong. Can he stay sticky with the pads on?
Yep.
And now you look at it and go, the pads are on. This is another step in the evolution of the camp battles, the position battles. You're looking at D-tackle. You're looking at wide receiver. You're looking at cornerback, too. Now we're going to see what we've got. It's another step. It's a palpable excitement, too, because when the pads are on, it's the thud. It's the real sounds of football. Of course, if you go to training camp, I don't think you're really picky for what days you're getting, especially when now you have to like kind of like put it on a prayer that you're going to get a ticket to go.
Yeah.
But the ones that are going now, I feel like they're more fortunate.
We do have word from camp. Rookie D-tackle TJ Sanders left the field with an athletic trainer. Nothing more on that. That is both from Alex Brasky and Catherine Fitzgerald. So multiple reports there. Still just annoying. Just annoying.
The annoyance continues.
But it's starting to get ridiculous. I am excited, though, for you brought up Coleman there with the pads being brought on, him being more of a physical receiver. You listen to Joe Brady with Jeremy and Joe, and he said it the first day he sat down with the media, too, about how much he liked Keon's game last year and kind of was like pushing back. Like, I know based on some of the questions I'm getting, other people didn't, but I did. And the connection with him and Allen continues to grow. It's tough to get a gauge, though, on where this team actually wants to go offensively in terms of how many targets are actually going to be up for grabs. Like, you know guys like Matt Collins are gone and Amari Cooper is gone. But are they going to be a team that throws all of a sudden 620 passes? Probably not. They were under 500 last year. Sure, weather game played into that. Allen didn't throw a ball in week 18, sure, right? But I don't imagine they're going to be a team that jumps up 130 targets or something like that. I don't imagine that
situation would have to dictate that. The defense would have to play a lot worse than it has in past regular seasons, and I don't see that happening.
I don't see that happening. And so, like, for Keon, is it really going to be just doubling up catches and yards so he gets like 50 balls and like 800 yards? That might be a great season for him.
That would be a great season for him, actually. Honestly, like, if it got to 800 yards with any of these receivers, I call that a net win.
For me, I think a lot of it has now just become, I just want this offense to be efficient. I don't want us to be sitting here in November or December already looking to April going, okay, well, when they can add another receiver.
Furthermore, what Brady said with Jeremy and Joe, last couple of years, we've had the ball in our hands with a chance to take the game. And we need to be efficient. We need to just be doing our job. We don't have to try to be playing the hero thing. And that is something to the offensive philosophy that Joe Brady seems to really wear.
Yeah.
He literally wears it. That is the everybody eats mentality. It is not just about, you know, spreading the ball around. It's just about, hey, we stay efficient. We stay doing our job. We stay
confident that we can keep things going without having to try to do too much. Everyone's a cog in the machine, and we all need everyone working on the same scale, the same pace, the same efficiency in order for the ball to be moving.
And it seemed like they got there once they added Amari Cooper. Cooper didn't obviously have the flash stats that you want.
Correct.
But the offensive passing game got much better when he jumped in. Now you do wonder, with a healthy Curtis Samuel, hopefully, Elijah Moore, Josh Palmer, of course, a year or two of Keon Coleman, and whatever the tight ends and running backs are going to give you, you do wonder if that's where they're going to start day one. And if they do, they're in a good spot. They have a tough opener against Baltimore.
Mm-hmm.
But that's where they can maybe be in a really good spot. I do look at Keon Coleman, and I just constantly wonder where he is going to fit in this offense. Not in a negative sense, but genuinely, like, just where is his role going to be? He was third for the Bills in most receiving categories from just a receiver basis. You know, catches, targets, yards, touches, the whole thing. I would say I'd want that again, though. Just be top three with receivers.
Yes, and especially if you're going to need a little bit more of a boost from, say, a Kincaid or maybe even James Cook out of the backfield, for example. Mm-hmm. But there's still something there.
Yeah.
If he gets to third, that's still solid. It's solid production. You want a player there. Do you want more? Of course you want more.
Mm-hmm. Yep. 803-0550, the number two call. Let's get connected to our fans before we hit our first time out. Brought to you by Northtown Kia. Shop online at northtownkia.com. We'll start off today with John on the line. John, good morning. How are we doing?
Good morning. How are you
doing? Doing very well. Doing very well.
Question for you guys this morning is, I hope you're going first. Second, what do you think is going to take for the Bills for that game opener against Baltimore to set the par for our season? And also, who do you think they should have at the stadium as the crowd pleaser for the opening game?
The legend of the game.
Appreciate it, John. Thank you.
I have not thought of who they should bring on. John, thanks for the call. To your first question about Baltimore, I think realistically for them, look, they beat Baltimore in the divisional round last year. A lot of it, though, was selling out on the run, and they did get turnovers. However, in the second half, the defense had struggles. Baltimore was able to move the ball almost at will. That, for me, like, and in terms of beating Baltimore, does the defensive line take early?
For me, furthermore, because John mentioned the part about like possibly like a tone setter sort of thing, losing the first game of the year has not stopped the Bills before.
No, that is right. That
As
is
a matter of
absolutely
fact,
right.
Probably the opposite.
They lost to Zach Wilson at one point.
They lost to Zach Wilson for the first game of the year, and they won the AFC East anyway.
A Pittsburgh team, too. And would that have been in 22?
I think it was 20.
Oh, no, that would have been 21. That's 21, yep.
21. Didn't stop them then either. So I wouldn't look at it as the end of the world. You may just need to make sure online you're not following any Ravens people because they will refuse to shut up. But that's online. That's social media. That's a whole different world.
I think
I'm not worried if they lose to Baltimore because good teams beat good teams.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what happened in the playoffs. Good teams beat good teams. The Bills and Ravens are good teams. They will beat each other. You will lose to a good team every now and then. Hell, it happened early in the season last year. It's not the end of the world that they lose to the Ravens because it shows a balanced fight between two teams. The Bills and the Chiefs themselves. It is a balanced fight between the two of them. They have gotten rather strict on the timing of it, of the Chiefs only win at a certain time of the year against Buffalo, and Buffalo wins it earlier than they do. I'm really thinking maybe we can just do a trade-off there. That'd be great.
Yeah, I'm really about done with that.
We don't need to. Yeah, it's monotonous.
Mm-hmm.
You know, change it up, mix it up. You know, get a little spicy every now and then. But I'm not worried about it at all. As for the legend of the game sort of thing, consider it's the last home opener at Highmark, or as many will call it, the Ralph. I would want somebody that you create a lot of memories with. I'm going to suggest Andre Reed.
Oh, see, I was going to go Bruce. Because I was right there
Same
with
era.
You on everything. I was like, last home opener, let's go to like a surefire Hall of Famer, that guy that when you see them enter the stadium, everyone loses their mind. I think Reed's a really good call. I'd go Bruce Smith. You're right. Like, last home opener, here we go. The Week 18 one's going to be interesting. Because I think there's a good
chance. You're absolutely getting one of those players, the Niners era's players there for that, too.
Because the Week 18 game, for the most part, could be boring, depending on how the Bills season goes.
Yeah.
So the legend of the game might be the most fun part of it. is the 90s helmet, and then who's coming out for it.
Can I trouble Thurman for week 18? Please.
I mean, it'd be nice to get the ball rolling now, because if he says yes. No now, he'd be like in 2 weeks, but man, have you thought about it?
Thurman
like,
Thomas, if you're listening, go. Consider week 18, please.
803-0550, the number to call. After this timeout, we will listen back to Bills head coach Sean McDermott speaking with the media before practice. This is WGR.
Welcome back, everyone. Injuries mounting at St. John Fisher. We've already mentioned that TJ Sanders left field, went with the athletic trainers. Have not gotten an update on that, but he is now being joined by Alec Anderson. He also heads to the medical tent with the athletic training staff. 803-0550, the number to call. You want to join the show. But now we go back to earlier this morning as Bills head coach Sean McDermott sat down with the media.
All right. Let me give you the injury update this morning and who will not practice. So we got Seth Van Pran, Spencer Brown, Tyrell Shavers, Tyrell with his ankle. Doesn't seem to be serious, so we look like we're in decent shape there. Curtis Samuel, Terrell Bernard, Elijah Moore, Dorian Williams, Caden Prather, Dalton Kincaid. Dalton with knee soreness after yesterday's practice. Dawson Knox. And then T. Bass has a little bit of pelvis area soreness, so we're dealing with that. He may or may not be out there. We'll see. So the time is yours.
All right, so none of that seems real promising. That's a long list for 40.
Yeah. No, it's not ideal, right? Especially with the names that are on there. So you're trying to move the team forward and develop, but it also allows an opportunity for us to see somebody step in and do the job. So that's just the nature of the of having the injuries that we do.
I saw Dalton yesterday a couple times, was on the ground, they were working on him, so that kind of popped up yesterday's practice.
Yeah, he had the he went for a ball. I think there was two or three defenders around him. I don't know exactly the mechanism, if it was a contact. There was contact on the play, or if it was just the way he landed or what, but that's a better question for Nate.
What's up, Prather's
injury? Hamstring.
The same injury that he hurt last year?
I believe so, but I can't be specific. I don't know the exact knee on that one.
Sean, Bobby did talk about managing player anxiety when it comes to performance in the era of social media. He was specifically referring to Cole Bishop, and whether you want to talk specifically about Cole or in general, more.
Yeah.
How is it different now dealing with younger players when they have to have that social media part of it when it comes to, especially this time of year when you're learning and developing, trying to figure out, taking them from guys who are, you know, being okay with learning to becoming the football player you're hoping they can be?
No, that's a real thing that people deal with, and not just, you know, football players, professional football players, but I think a real part of life these days with the amount of exposure through social media in particular, media overall, but social media in particular, it's a real part of life. And when you're trying to, in this case, get people to perform and become the best version of themselves, it's important that we do our best to manage that and try to take that off of them as much as possible. So I think that's becoming more and more a real thing that we have to deal with and in the NFL, but also in life in general. So it's, I think the better you can be at disarming that and making sure the guys just stick to the process and get better and focus on the controllables, I think that's the right way to go about it. So everyone's a little bit different, don't get me wrong, but these players, I've learned over the years that they're just like all of us, right? They want to perform. They feel the pressure to perform, the pressure of expectations, and, they're real human beings. And so as a coach, as coaches, as a staff, it is huge for us to be able to navigate or help them navigate that the best way possible and get them to perform in doing so at the highest level possible.
With the injuries of linebacker, how much of an asset is Shaq Thompson, just given his experience and his familiarity with what you want to do?
No, Shaq, he has familiarity with our system, although we've been apart for some years now. But it's good to have him back. He's a really good football player. You know, I'm a little bit older than he remembers me. He's a little bit older than I remember him, which makes it fun too, because it's good to get caught up on life and see how he's grown over the years. Super proud of him and the family man that he is, and the career that he's had to this point.
Dawson was activated yesterday, but he won't practice today. Is that correct?
He will not be. It's too early for that.
But LaVisca will practice today?
He'll do a little bit.
Okay.
Yeah, he'll do a little bit.
Zach Davidson's taken advantages, it seems, back-to-back years now of opportunities. How have you seen his game grow since he's been in the system?
Yeah, Zach's a great example of our culture. You know, here's a player that, you know, came to us at an early phase of his career, was in a different culture and setting and environment, and to watch him grow and thrive, he's just been a great addition from an energy standpoint. He's a great young man, also a great family man, and he's out here every day working to improve. And I mean, you love stories like that, right? That guy's coming off of a knee 2 years ago now, I think it's been. So he's seen the adversity that was asked about earlier. He's been through that, and he continues to push through. And I'm extremely proud of his attitude, his belief in himself, and his willingness to work every day.
John, when the Pats come out, what do you want to see and what don't you want to see?
I want to see nasty, physical football, but I don't want to see a disrespect for a man's career and dirty football. That's not how we play in Buffalo. So we painted a pretty clear picture this morning of what that looks like for the new players in particular. So that nastiness has got to be developed here, but it can't be at the expense of someone's career. So clean, but physical.
Sean, to follow up on that, Friday Alec Anderson got into it with the teammates hung off. He headed down the tunnel pretty quickly after. Was that a statement from you and the coaching staff? That, to your point, you just said that's not going to work.
Yeah, I mean, you guys know fights are going to happen. And you know, I can't sit here and say, hey, I'm for fights, against fights. Fights are going to happen. When you cheap shot someone, I have no respect for that. And so I thought that was a cheap shot, and so I sent him to the locker room. And I communicated clearly to him from a following up standpoint of why I did that. I believe in Alec. I love him. He's one of our, you know, tone setters, which I love, but there is a line there, especially against your own teammates.
Hey, Sean, was there a teaching moment for Maxwell Harrison yesterday with how he finished through the Shavers rep at the end of practice there?
We've talked about this a little bit, a couple of the coaches and myself, Joe, yesterday afternoon. There's football, right? And you never want to see a player go down. Thankfully, Shaves is in, you know, pretty good shape, all things considered, with the way that looked. So, you know, I thought maybe we finished a step too long on the play. But listen, we can sit here and bitch and complain and put our hands up in the air and say, you know, but we're competing, and that's football. And some things are going to come up, unfortunately, sometimes. That to me is almost a bang-bang, maybe a step too long. But you start coaching that, and then the players pull off. So we're trying to get something done here. There are going to be some of those things that come up. Again, that's football. That is different than that situation that we just discussed over there.
Before the injury, it seemed like Shavers was making a real push. What have you seen from him early on in the camp and even before?
Yeah, no, he's making – that'll continue. He'll be back in a couple of days, I believe, and everything goes as planned. And he's a great young man. You guys know it. Probably one of the highlights last year that I remember was him taking that screen and going the distance, you know. So – you know, Shaves and I just caught up a little bit this morning after the team meeting, and he's in good spirits. You know, he wants to be out there. I know he needs those reps. We want to see him. But, you know, he's a hard guy to stop just in terms of his heart, his desire. You saw the players come over to him. I think that spoke volumes of who he is and how they respect him.
In a very short while, Khalil Shakir has emerged as one of those core guys, like, you know, that you've had since, you know, under 2017. How has he emerged? What have you seen him emerging into that leadership role and being, I guess, a part of that Bills culture.
Well, I think you saw when he was out last year, it was a game and a half, like really the second half of the first Ravens game. He was out there, but he really wasn't able to perform like he can. And I think you saw the impact on our offense and impact on our football team as a result. So, no, he's one of the guys. He's one of the main guys that can drive our football team and take it to another level.
He seems underrated nationally. I'm not sure if he's on the radar.
Yeah, I'm not really into the rankings. He's one in my book, so that's all that matters.
Availability has been
Cam Lewis. He's been with you a long time. You got a lot of new guys in the secondary this year, and he seems to always be somewhere for you. When you think of Cam and what he's done for your team and what he could do, what do you think about
him? I love the fact that he's a UB product, and here's a young man that, you know, much like some of the names you've already mentioned here this morning, of comes from practice squad, kind of ping-ponging back and forth to the active, finally gets pushed up, and he earned that. And then he has created staying power because of his position flexibility. And every day that he's in the role that he's in, he gets more and more, he gets better and better at it, which is interesting because he's balancing sometimes not two, but three positions. Even if you look last year, he played dime, he played nickel, he played safety, albeit some of those in backup roles. But that's just as hard as anything because it means he's not getting the reps during the week, but then he's asked to perform on game day. So that's, I tip my cap to Cam and the way he's handled that. And years ago when we had the UB Pro Day or our local Pro Day when he was there. I mean, Lance Leipold, who was his coach, is like, hey, this is the guy. And then I walked around to different staff members and saying, hey, and everyone pointed to Cam. And it's been real. It's been true. So
availability has been a bit of an issue for Baylen for the first last couple of years. But when he's healthy, what does he bring for you?
You're talking linebackers, right? So linebackers, especially if you're not the starter, you're playing special teams, your core special teams players, and expected to contribute in that capacity. And Baylen has that ability, as you said, and he knows this, we've talked about it, is the availability is what's held him back at times. So he's very aware of that, and we're doing the best, our medical staff's doing the best that we can to get him just in the right spot so that, you know, we can test that a little bit, but not too much, and then he can get on into the season here.
With John Sullivan, have you seen another level of confidence in
would you say
Sullivan?
Yeah.
A different level of confidence and really development as far as technique for the type of role that he can play in your defense?
Yes. He's a second-year player, as you know, that I thought really had a good offseason. And some players come in, make an impact, their first year, and then that second or that first summer or second summer, however you want to say it, they kind of, oh, I got this, I know what this is, I've done the same thing going from junior high to high school to college, you know, they kind of get comfortable. And Sally didn't do that. Sally had an impact on special teams a little bit there for us and had some reps on defense. And I thought his summer was really good, and that's paying off as you watch him out here already this to camp this morning.
Yeah, you're good. How do you feel Cole Bishop has handled what you've asked of him thus far?
Done a good job. Yeah, he's done a good job. He's focused. T-Rap has done a really good job of basically, you know, locking arms with him and keeping him dialed in, but more like, you know, safeties, as you guys know, with Mike and Jordan, they have to be in lockstep, right, along with the middle linebacker and the nickel position because they are the quarterbacks of the defense. And Cole, in his second year, is asked to do that, which is a hefty responsibility in addition to just playing his position. So, I mean, that leadership by those guys that have helped him has been instrumental in his development to this point. There's still a lot of room for work, though, you know, just through reps, experience, seeing what he hasn't seen, you know, last year being hurt some of the season. So, getting these reps, the longer he can stay out here, the better off he'll be.
There was Buffalo Bills head coach Sean McDermott before practice got underway this morning over at St. John Fisher. Before we hit our next time out, tune in this week for your chance to win two tickets to a Buffalo Bisons home game on Saturday, August 2nd at Salins Field at 6:35 p.m. Celebrate Women in Sports plus a post-game drone show. 803-0550, the number two call. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer hanging with you here on the Northtown Automotive X Point Show. And this is WGR. Wrapping up hour number one here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Training camps were going on throughout the weekend. The Bills had Saturday off, but did practice on Sunday. Another team that practiced, the Dallas Cowboys.
Oh, really? One of 32?
One of 32. And former Bill Kyer Elam, of course, so on Dallas.
This was so fun. This was so fun. Genuinely like a heartwarming style kind of thing, but also just like, in the same sense, hey, man, sometimes you just got to sell your heart, even if it's in practice. Who cares? Kyer Elam has an interception on. He effectively looked like he ran the route.
Yeah,
and Prescott threw it right to him. But this kind of goes back to something that Joe Kelly and I brought up, a topic to start Sports Talk Saturday, training camp memories.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, this one's an easy one for this kid. Kyer Elam picks the ball off, goes celebrating with the crowd, comes out with a child.
I mean, like, fully, like, picked the kid up from the side and was, like, carrying him around.
They gave him the ball Simba. And, like, they give him the Simba treatment, give him the ball back because he dropped it. But, yeah, no, that's an instant right there.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
That's one of the most heartwarming, funny celebrations that you would see in a training camp. And it's like, go experience training camp.
I was happy to see it was Elam, though, with that celebration. I have no ill will towards him at all.
It was
a missed pick for the Bills. I think he just didn't really fit the team at all. And I mean that by like scheme and what they actually wanted him to do. I'd love if he could go to Dallas and kind of rediscover himself.
Most of his comments also were more of like believing in himself, not about bashing the team.
I will also say he may have a real spot to work with Dallas because one of their rookies, a guy we were kind of high on is maybe like a late round or later round, like second and third round, Siobhan Revelle. There was a video from him over the weekend, too. I think he's way further behind in his rehab than maybe a lot of us were willing to talk about.
Which is why he got pushed off and down the draft order.
I think he was a third-round pick for them.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, he did not look great. And so there really might be a spot there for Elam to maybe kind of find himself in Dallas, a team that, well, everything else going on, they may actually need some help at corner. They really only have Diggs, and he's not the best cover corner in the world. 803-0550, the number two call. We'll jump around the NFL in hour number two. Want to talk some of the stuff, including with Dallas, Micah Parsons. Also, though, jump into Travis Hunter and how good he potentially could be in his rookie year. Zach Jones and Derek Kramer, you're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show on WGR.
You're listening to the...
Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the misfits, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the biggest rule breakers in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about the wildest moments, toughest lessons, and why breaking the rules might just be the key to success. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Derek and Zach. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
He has been somebody that I've been leaning on tremendously. Just his mental game and taking care of himself mentally is at such a high level that that's been something that I've worked on for a while now. So just asking him questions on how he stays strong mentally. And, you know, this game is 99% mental, you know, so you got to have that right in order to go out there and perform physically. So I've been leaning on him heavy, and obviously he's a baller as well, and same with Palm, bigger dude, baller as well, physical when he plays, great dude all around. So that whole receive room every single year is just great dudes gelling together to go out there and make plays for each other.
Buffalo Bills wide receiver Khalil Shakir talking about, well, wide receiver room, guys gelling, working together. They're continuing that everyone eats mantra. We'll see if it has even better success this year. It will be hard in terms of points per game. They did score 30 points per game last year,
right,
but they absolutely could be more efficient. They could absolutely be one of the more strong aspects of this team because there were points last year, including the AFC Championship game, where guys just were not able to get open quick enough. I think that's where you add a guy like a Josh Palmer, who sort of his calling guard is that he gets open and he gets open quickly. It does sound like him and Josh Allen's chemistry continues to build over at St. John Fisher. Speaking of training camp, Sal Capaccio takes you behind the scenes during Bills training camp with Sal's All Access Facebook Live on WGR's Facebook page, driven by your Upstate Honda dealers for great deals on the entire Honda lineup. Visit your Upstate Honda dealer today. We'll step a little bit aside from Bills practice. We'll keep you posted on anything that is going on there. But I did want to jump in around kind of the NFL and just some of the other storylines that have been going on. We've already mentioned stuff like Kyrie Elam getting a pick and having a fun celebration. That was kind of cool to see. But staying with Cowboys camp as well.
Yeah.
Man, the Joneses, which hurts me to say as a fellow Jones. Both Jerry and Steven, and I've heard that stuff, you know, being a Texas fan and having, you know, following Texas reporters who ultimately also kind of dabble in the Dallas Cowboys, the rumblings there have been that the team actually won't change all that much when Steven eventually takes over for Jerry. And,
right.
and whether that be at Jerry's passing or, you know, years before that, everything I've heard is that Steven is a lot like his dad. And that very much showed when talking about Micah Parsons.
People also like tend to gravitate toward the one time where he was like, no, don't take Johnny Manziel.
Yeah.
And how long ago was that, though? Like, we need to remember, people, it's one incident from...
Well, I'm fairly certain the player that they did actually take retired this year. Yeah, Zach Martin.
But that was, it was a good pick, but it was also how
well,
long
it's
ago?
So long ago that the guy had a 10-year career and retired.
Yeah.
It's been a bit.
We can deal with the fact of like, okay, he saved his father from doing one bad thing, but it doesn't seem like that he's just like the antithesis of his father. No. This is going to look more like, well, apple tree didn't fall far. And again, your comments with or you mentioning their comments about the Micah Parsons saga at Cowboys camp of it was so goofy. To hear, oh my God, it was, he's got to want to be paid too.
Yeah, we want to pay him. And this is coming off of fans chanting, pay Micah at camp. He spoke with the media saying, well, we want to pay him, but Parsons has to want to get paid too. And this also comes off of from a few months ago. Jerry Jones was basically boxing out Parsons' agent. So Parsons wouldn't actually sign the contract, even though Jerry's saying, well, it's going to be the biggest contract a non-quarterback has ever signed. It's just like there's two pass rusher dilemmas going on right now. There's two battles going on. You got the Bengals with Trey Hendrickson. You have the Cowboys now with Micah Parsons. The Cowboys have never had the problem of actually paying people. They will, in fact, do it. Their problem is they wait so long, they're paying more money than they needed to.
It costs more money for them to do things because they are not as proactive in getting deals done. And here is the latest example of – yeah, sure. Paying Micah Parsons. It's a no-brainer. It's just, I mean, what's taking so long? And
yeah.
In the interim, you had, for non-quarterbacks, you had Ja'Marr Chase, Myles Garrett, and now TJ Watt all jump in front of you, two of which are at your position.
Mm-hmm.
Or not position, but like,
you're all being paid in the same.
Your impact.
Yeah.
And your style of play. He is listed linebacker. He does rush the passer. It's just, yeah, now it's costing more, though. You had two edge rushers that also got paid the biggest contract for a non-quarterback. All you had to do was jump in front of that. And you didn't. And it's costing you more money again. And we all wonder why the Cowboys flame out within getting to the divisional round.
Yeah, I think since 95 or 96, the only team in the NFC to not go to an NFC championship game in that time. And, of course, this is the dynasty of the 90s. I mean, it's under the same ownership, the whole thing. It's just, you know, I do look at them. Like, Parsons is not leaving Dallas, at least at this juncture. He could leave after a second deal, what have you. But at least at this point, he's not going to be traded because they can't come to an agreement. He will get paid. The problem is, as you pointed out, three other guys, two of which were in this position group, got paid before him, got paid to be the highest paid non-quarterback in football, and it just keeps going up and up and up and up. Now, ultimately, and I think Kevin Clark said this when he was on ESPN last week, and I fully agree with him. it's all to keep Dallas in the zeitgeist. They need to be within the media's, you know, earshot. They have to. And Kevin Clark mentioned that if the football gods came down to Jerry, and I'm paraphrasing here, and said, you will win next year's Super Bowl. You'll win like the next three. You just can't do a press conference. Jerry would say no deal. And that's absolutely right. And the reason
Jerry,
why
you're not allowed to talk to the media, and in return, you will win three Super Bowls in a row. He would say no.
Yeah, and I fully agree with that. And it's something like, you know, when we look at the Bills, and you know, to a certain extent, you could sit there and go, it's been boring because all the James Cook stuff never really materialized. And it does seem to be.
I'm happy with boring.
No, right. And it will, because boring often wins. I say it all the time with drafting. Like, usually the less sexy pick is actually probably the right pick, you know. And it's true of free agency, too. You don't want to get involved in the first day or two. You want to wait. Who's available afterwards? Okay, we're going to kind of plug some holes with the free agent signings. We're not going to make swaths as big as a tsunami to try to cover up everything from the team in free agency and make bad deals. But the Cowboys, I mean, like, that's the thing. That's why everyone, I think, always still talks about them. It's just that they are one of those teams that just they refuse to stay out of the media, and that's both good and bad. I mean, they are the brand, right?
They also refuse to stay out of their own way.
Oh, absolutely. That's part of it.
And again, all you had to do is just get things going. Get it done sooner. Why are you having beef with his agent? Like,
I mean, that still makes no sense. He wants to pay him as much money as he does, but it seems he wants to do it like without the agents there. And no player who's been in the league this long will do that. Not a shot. And
outside of Lamar Jackson, who is a different case.
But yeah, he's representing himself. If you have your agent, you're not walking to in a room without him.
Exactly.
And to be fair, I think days of not having an agent they're already not very common. I think that's going away because you're going to have kids out of high school having agents with NIL money and stuff like that. That's going away, and no one's going to walk into those situations like that. It just it is so odd what they're doing, and the comments aren't better. I mean, he wants to get paid, or he has to want to get paid too.
Yeah, that's just he has to want to get paid what we're offering him right now, you know, and that's not enough.
No, and then you even go back to the earlier comments where Jerry couldn't even get the number of games Parsons missed last year correct. He said six. It was actually four. He threw Dak Prescott under the bus with his injuries and then paying him and the guaranteed money. Just you're right. Like they can't get out of their own way, but in part, I think to Kevin Clark's point, they kind of don't want to.
Yeah.
I think in almost a way, and this is not 100%, but I think in almost a way, Jerry's like, I've won my Super Bowls. Now it's time to make the business. And it's not – that's not right, but that's how it feels all the time.
Yeah.
Is that I've made my gamble. I won my Super Bowls. Now it's about building the brand as much as I can.
And it just – I don't know, man. It's so easy, though, because Cowboys fans are amongst the loudest that there is because it is such a brand. And no matter what happens, it's always, you know, this is our year. Which I know, Rich coming from Buffalo saying these comments. But – there are enough people that would be like, no, let's slow down. In Dallas, there is no such thing because it is about the brand. It is about Jerry. And it's always about Jerry, and it always will be.
Yeah.
And it's just so frustrating, though, to know that there is a team out there that is willing to slow themselves down in terms of the pursuit of a Lombardi for the owner's ego. And how he wants to operate things. No, we aren't going to put any blinds in our stadium, even though our wide receivers can't catch the football in one half of the field.
That feels like such like a 60s thing.
That's
like
a cartoon villain.
But that's Ferguson also going like, I need the helmets changed from white because everyone in the division is wearing white and I can't tell the difference. Mm-hmm. Like it does not seem like it should be a modern problem, but it is. Like,
but that's the thing. Like, ready? The Bills made a change to help a player and help their team. Jerry, that's his shrine. That's Jerry's world. You're asking him to make a change to something?
Yeah.
To the shrine that he built?
Not going to work.
Even though it's construction workers that built it, and you know, he didn't really do much lifting of anything there.
But so people have brought that up over the years, too, and now because the Bills are getting their new stadium, I've seen a lot of people go, have they done their due diligence? Like, due diligence had to have been done with Jerry World, and it just happened to be like, oh, yeah, crap, the sun's going to be setting there. We play a lot of games at 4 o'clock. That's a miss. because the one big thing was, is there going to be potentially a wind tunnel?
Right.
For the Bills Stadium. And I've seen like people on Twitter ask that question, and I've seen people that are working on it going, no, like we have done as much work as possible to figure out everything. Everything is for the brand. I think for the Cowboys and for the Jones family.
Yep.
You're even seeing this too. There's a cheerleaders documentary on Netflix that has season two. It's not even just a miniseries. They have two seasons now worth of it. I've mentioned it because I love sports documentaries. I'm going to watch the one that's The Gambler in America's Team, which is also coming out on Netflix. I believe that's also coming out on Netflix, about the 90s team and all that stuff. It's just – it is weird to kind of like just watch them operate because they do feel like – in the opposite vein of some of these other teams, like Cincinnati, that they're playing an entirely different sport because of how they do things. Everything is so internal in Dallas. You know, they really only bring in coaches that have been there for a while or played for the team
or have
some connection to Jerry. I mean, remember the Deion Sanders to Dallas stuff. It was because he played and Jerry and Deion love each other.
And yet at the same time, everyone would probably say, yeah, sure, there's a connection mm-hmm. there, but there's no way
he's gonna be
that
a yes
Deion
man.
Would answer to Jerry for everything there. No, that's a coach that has got a lot of pride to himself.
Yeah.
And
in a way is almost trying to build up his coaching career.
Right.
But you look at the last three head coaches they've had. Jason Garrett, who is for all intents and purposes the adopted son of Jerry Jones, from everything you've heard, is that like they love each other like a family, the whole thing. That's great. But he played for the team prior. They went on way too long with him being the head coach. Then they go to Mike McCarthy, who almost left in disgrace with Green Bay with how everything ended with him and Aaron Rodgers, the whole thing. He was perceived as not a very good coach by the end, even though early in his career when him and Rodgers won a Super Bowl, he was considered like one of the better young offensive minds out there. And now we're at Brian Schottenheimer, who I don't know a single soul who thinks that's like a legitimate hire. It seems like everyone is sort of just waiting for this to be a tailspin.
Right, and that's
for them to be bad and then for him to get fired after a year.
That's kind of the shame of it. Yeah, because like Garrett coaches this team for 10 years.
Too long. I mean, he made it a decade, and I don't think anyone thought that should have been the case. Just flat out.
And it's only one that like truly bottom out that you actually even think about that sort of thing. Garrett finally has moved on from like they were a top 10 offense. They had the most yards that year.
Mm-hmm.
But that was also just with Garrett, it was also oftentimes you're good but never good enough.
Yep.
And it was that plateau sort of thing. And then like the occasional bottom out season. And with McCarthy, it was the same thing of like your offenses were humming, but you could never get it all put together.
I mean, you're the only team in the 7-seed era to lose to a 7-seed.
You're the first and only team to have lost. Yeah.
And was blown out.
In your own barn, you were blown out, laughed out of your own building. And yeah, but hey, remember that time that he took that one chance and got rid of Jimmy Johnson?
Even that.
He'll remind you of that all the time.
I mean, even getting rid of Jimmy Johnson for Barry Switzer didn't totally work out. It kind of like just burned. They had the team.
They had the team that could have lasted longer.
Yeah, at least a little longer, because obviously you then have the stuff with Irvin and his career kind of ends and really the Triplets kind of fall off. But yeah, it's just with the last coach he hired that I think really had pushback with him was probably Bill Parcells. And I don't know how long that really – I don't know how
– That was 2003.
I don't know how good that relationship was ultimately at that point. 803-0550, number to call if you want to jump on the show. Some other NFC East news. Terry McLaurin did show up to Washington camp, though if he's essentially in a hold-in. He's on PUP list for an injury, but every report there is they're nowhere near close on a contract. He's just showing up so he stops getting fined. That makes complete sense. It's why holdouts are not a thing really anymore. I mean, it takes a really bad situation for Hendrickson in Cincinnati – to really go that far, because now most of them are like, I don't really want to get fined, and to kind of help myself and my team in the season, I'll be in camp. I'll just be hanging on the sidelines, on the bike, in meetings, the whole thing.
Teammates respect you being there.
Yep. Everyone gets it.
And like also understanding
money,
and also understanding the business of try to get yours.
Mm-hmm.
And then they can support both of them when you're there.
Yeah.
Because you're there. And you're right. The hold-in thing is absolutely more commonplace at this point. It avoids you getting fined. And all of a sudden, oh, hey, he's on the physically unable to perform list. We all know what it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's not actually an ankle injury. It's a problem that they're having that they've had for months now. And though him getting back in the building, can help spur negotiations along again. And at the end of the day, he knows like there's still a year of a contract to play out. Now that he's in the building,
mm-hmm.
he knows that he has to go ahead and do that.
We talked about this, I think, a little bit last week or the week prior when it comes to Jaden Daniels, year two.
You want Terry McLaurin in the building.
I got to imagine if Daniels has any pull within that building, and he may after how good his rookie year was and where they were able to go,
mm-hmm.
I got to imagine he's pushing to get this deal done. They have Deebo Samuel and like Luke McCaffrey. Those are the receivers past Terry McLaurin. They are not really well loaded in that room. Even the guy that popped off in the playoffs, De'Ami Brown, is gone.
Right.
So they're not, you know, chock full of receivers and here we go. It seemed like the trade for Deebo Samuel, which, by the way, was around the combine. I mean, that was very early in the offseason. That seemed more to complement the room they already had. I've got to imagine Daniels is pushing for that. I've got to imagine he is pushing for that. Get the deal done. Get my guy in here. Let's go. Especially, too, and this is maybe more the fan perspective, the NFC East is always so up for grabs. Like the Eagles look dominant in their Super Bowl performance. They were great all year last year.
But they had to fight all year with Washington.
They had to fight all year, but also the NFC East is the NFC East. There's a pretty solid chance the Eagles will have a good year next year. They'll win like 10 games, 11 games, and Washington takes the division. And they're all of a sudden the one or two seed.
Or for some reason, Dallas plays up the potential.
But that doesn't happen if – look, receivers are not the most important position in football. They are very flashy, but you don't really want to build your team around receivers. You want to build them – the lines, quarterback, and then build out from there. But in terms of the development of a second-year quarterback, I mean, that was huge for Josh Allen, bringing in John Brown and Cole Beasley, upgrading from what they'd already kind of figured out in his rookie year.
And then even upgrading from them the next year.
And then upgrading again. And in part because they had their left tackle already set up for Allen. The offensive line was coming together. They paid a lot of money for Mitch Morris. You know, they were building that offensive line, but they needed to get better and better and better at receiver. And now we've gotten to a point where they feel pretty comfortable in where they're at now, which is let's get a lot of guys who are pretty good and have an MVP quarterback and go from there. And maybe one or two of these guys will break out. I think the hope has been Keon and Dalton Kincaid will become the clear-cut guys going forward. Khalil Shakir's a really nice piece. That's awesome if that happens or has happened. But I think the hope was, based on where they drafted him, Keon and Kincaid will break out. They're part of this forever, and they'll grow with Allen, and everything else will be kind of piecemealed together. We'll grab guys as they go. Palmer, a three-year deal. Ooh, Elijah Moore's available. We'll throw a year in there. Washington wasn't really able to do all that much. They had their guy.
Yeah, and the other thing about it is that McLaurin has been really the mark of consistency for this team.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
There's one time he doesn't get over 1,000 yards. This is rookie year. And it's 919, so he gets pretty close.
He was still pretty close, wasn't he?
He was pretty close.
Yeah.
His touchdowns have fluctuated, and they absolutely ballooned last year.
And that's where he's trying to get paid. James Cook's the same thing.
But you do have a guy that consistently gets you into the four digits at wide receiver.
Mm-hmm.
He'll still have a couple of years left on prime capability. He's incredibly healthy. Man has not missed a game in 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
Not a single game.
No, I mean, you're right. He has been the model of consistency for
this organization.
That has had a rough time with that.
That went through hell itself, known as Dan Snyder.
Mm-hmm. And particularly the last few years where it just felt every day was a problem.
Yeah.
It was not a good time.
I can't help but think this is something that just should get done. And whether it does or doesn't, I do think McLaurin ultimately plays.
I do too.
But it's not something that is rocket science here, so to say. He is also, last year was also his most efficient season.
Mm-hmm.
Good quarterback, less than his targets, kind of goes hand in hand. I think there's just it's the argument that I've theorized from the get-go, and I know that you've agreed with me on this. It's term.
I don't
want to go past 4 years probably, because then that gets McLaurin to his age 33 season, and the Daniels contract will begin its extension after that. And McLaurin would be 34 at that time. You really want to do that? You really want to dance like that with a cap number, even if it's for 1 or 2 years? No. The answer is no.
And yeah, they're in a bad spot, I think, just because it also doesn't help either. McLaurin is very good, not great.
Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the misfits, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the biggest rule breakers in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about the wildest moments, toughest lessons, and why breaking the rules might just be the key to success. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
I think if McLaurin had like 1,400 yards, had the jump and touchdowns, the whole thing, it'd be an easy one. But for him to kind of just like, this is who he is. It's very good. It's going to help McLaurin, or it's going to help Daniels, but are we sure this is going to last into year 31, 32, 33?
Do you remember what I said, though, about the quarterbacks that they had?
Right. I don't disagree.
So he's been the model of consistency with bad quarterback play.
Very bad quarterback play.
We are looking at bad quarterback play.
Mm-hmm.
And he is the model of consistency all throughout that. I don't know. I do think that he is great and that he is held back by things. Like his rookie season, he had Case Keenum, Colt McCoy started a game.
Oh, well, yeah, I was going to say, change your tone on Colt.
And Dwayne Haskins, rest in peace.
Mm-hmm.
But he wasn't a good quarterback.
No.
And then what do we have after that? Alex Smith, Kyle Allen, Taylor Heinicke,
mm-hmm.
Garrett Gilbert starts a game.
Mm-hmm.
Ryan Fitzpatrick is actually a starter for the team.
Sam Howell for, I think, a full year, right? Howell's our starting quarterback?
Howell was a full year starting quarterback. Carson Wentz and his god-awful track record.
That's right. Carson Wentz got there.
And then a full season of Sam Howell. I do wonder what he would have done with Ryan Fitzpatrick, though. He only got one game. He started that first game, and then he was out for the
year. There was a lot of excitement, I know, here in Buffalo. And then, just the hope of, like, is Fitzpatrick going to finally get in the playoffs? We can actually root for this, too, because it's over in the NFC. Like, that'll be fun.
And then Fitzy showed up in a Bills playoff game shirtless.
That is that year. That is right. That is absolutely right. 803-0550, the number two call. Let's get to a call here before our next timeout. Let's go to John here. John, how we doing?
Hey, guys, thanks. A couple comments. So if you're in fantasy football, would you rather have Diggs and Hollins or Coleman and Shakir? I'm not thrilled on that trade. I think Diggs healthy. In New England, I think he's got some pretty good weapons. I feel that Buffalo's chance to make it the big run for the big game was 2 years ago. I think we're on a decline. Irrelevant. Other teams are getting better. I think we lost some talent. I'm wondering what you guys think of New England's wide receivers, Hollins and Diggs.
Yeah, John.
I don't think Shakir is the number one to me on any team. I think he was paid, $60 million. I'll hang up and listen. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, thanks, John. I mean, Shakir's not really their number one. I mean, he's their number one target getter, but he's their slot receiver. They're hoping he's going to be a plus version of Cole Beasley.
I'm going to...
Did he say he was paid $60 million?
I'm going to quote Brandon Bean for words that he said on this very station to help you out with this one. We're not playing fantasy football.
That is correct.
I don't think you should open the premise of this on mm-hmm. who would you rather have in fantasy football. Just to help try to gauge things properly at that point.
By the way, Shakir, 4 years, $53 million.
Diggs got 60.
Yes.
That's what it was. You don't need to open a question with that because I feel like it limits what you are capable of putting the argument for in that case. And look, man, I get it. They haven't won and they probably had blown their best opportunities too. But I'm not going to sit here and pretend like they're on a decline here.
I don't really know what talent they've lost. Matt Collins didn't have 400 yards last year.
Yeah.
He's a fine number four receiver that happened to be their only deep threat guy.
He led the team in touchdowns with five.
Five, which is a career high for him.
I'm not like I don't again, you're frustrated about the past opportunities and how they've, made their mistakes and blown those opportunities. Let's not pretend like they're on a decline, though. They're not.
Yeah. 803-0550, the number to call. John, thanks for the call. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here until 12 o'clock. This is WGR.
It's nothing different than before. I feel like my urgency, attention to detail, nothing that's been different before, but just knowing that I got a mission at the end. This team want to win games, and ultimately me, I'm battling for a job, so I want to put my best foot forward and make sure that my teammates know that I'm accountable, I know my stuff, and they can rely on me in any situation in the game.
Buffalo Bills cornerback Tre'Davious White talking about being on a mission this year. He also mentioned, I think in that media spot, about this offseason too being the first one in a number of years he wasn't rehabbing anything, and he got to just focus on his entire body, on you know, the mission, the goal, what have you, and it wasn't just getting healthy. And you know, I'm seeing some stuff from Max Harrison. We talked to Sal. Sal said like one of the players he's been keeping an eye on, just kind of partially because of who he is Harrison, his athletic ability. But I've seen like some reports that he's taken a little bit of time to gel. Obviously, he's a rookie. He's a little raw. If they really do get Trey White back, who is a little bit more like the Ravens' Trey White, plus obviously being a little bit more comfortable knowing the system, the whole thing, they, I think, will be in a really good spot there at cornerback too. It'll allow them to actually slowly bring in Max Harrison, unlike last year with the safeties. I think there was a real struggle with the Bills having to stick with Rapp and Hamlin rather than Bishop going in, and that's because of Bishop's injuries at the start. For most of camp, actually, he was out.
Yes, and I think that it's going to help, though, with in terms of White coming back here. And also, here's an additional thing for you. Yes, Bobby Babich is the defensive coordinator now, and yes, there are going to be different wrinkles in this, but the defense is mostly the same.
Mm-hmm.
So how much does Tre'Davious White have to prepare even on the mental standpoint of this? No, you are now, you're on a mission, and it's not just body, but mind.
Yeah.
That could even be at peace, coming back to a system that you know what they're asking of you. You know you're a good scheme fit. You found out the hard way that the Rams was not.
Yeah, that was that was hard to see. Like,
that was hard to watch.
Yeah,
every Bills fan probably covered their eyes and was like, oh my God. No, not like this, please.
Mm-hmm.
And then he gets traded to the Ravens and he looks better because they don't ask different things. Well, they do ask different things, and they were things that Tre'Davious White can do. I don't think there is a better way for him to come into this season than back to a defense that he's familiar with,
mm-hmm.
without injury for the first time in a couple of seasons. He's not rehabbing. He is just working.
Yeah.
That allows for such clarity and focus that I think people, I would like to be pleasantly surprised, is my guess. I'm going to be pleasantly surprised by what Tre'Davious White is going to be able to bring back.
Yeah, I hope Bills. So. I hope so. 803-0550, the number to call. We do have a bit of an injury update from camp. If you've been with us since the beginning, rookie D tackle TJ Sanders along with Alec Anderson both went to the athletic trainer. They went into the medical tent. Good news, though, for Sanders. Alex Brasky, about 15 minutes ago, did tweet out that Sanders was back on the field for team drills. Nothing since then, nothing on Anderson, but a good sign because that injury report, I mean, Derek, we were talking with Sal at the start, and 5 minutes after he left us,
it's
all of a sudden, here's Anderson, here's Sanders. And you're like, oh, come on. Like, goodness gracious. Practice is done, by the way, as well. Greg Rousseau was speaking with the media today, so that'll be easy. I'm interested for him as well this year. But, man, it was like, come on.
It really has. Like, I mentioned the term annoying, and then what do we get?
10 minutes later, not even.
Just two of them right there.
Yep. And it was just like, oh, okay, more guys have added. And we've mentioned it too. I mean, it's annoying. No one seems all that concerned. So, like, it's more just a frustration and annoyance. But you never like to see it the first day of pads, especially for a guy like a TJ Sanders, who we've been kind of waiting, him and Deion Walker,
excitedly,
to see, okay, campus sounded pretty good for them. We've got Ed Oliver comparing Deion Walker to a dancing bear. I've got a bunch of people talking about TJ Sanders looking good. Okay, like day one of pads. Let's go. What do we got? And 5 minutes into it, it was like, nope. To the medical tent. Now, again, good news for him. He was able to enter back for team drills, and practice has wrapped for today. But yeah, just I'm very excited for Trey White. I really am. I'm not usually somebody, and I've mentioned this a lot, I'm not usually somebody that likes to go back to the known aspect to players who previously played on the Bills. I know former Bills wide receiver Gabe Davis spoke with Kay Adams last week.
Yep.
And that is something – I can even love the player and think they could really help the team. I will still probably almost always be very late to the party of wanting to do that. I just don't. I like building through the draft. I like getting new people in, you know. In part, also for me too, you know, in some ways there's a reason you haven't won a championship yet. Let's maybe not keep going back to the same group
right.
who wasn't able to do it. If we're just looking at the Bills, Trey White is one of those few I had no issues with. In part, also, it kind of felt like it was written on the wall. The Bills were going to add a corner early.
Right.
It was not like their A plan was going to be, all right, well, Trey White's our cornerback too. Let's go we're only going to draft Dorian Strong
right.
and Hancock in the later rounds of the draft, and we hope they're good. No. They had
this
a plan
was not
there.
Their plan. When right. they signed Tre'Davious White, it was, we're going to grab a bunch of bodies, bring them all to training camp, and let them all fight it out.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, we're not done yet when it comes to grabbing bodies for corner because here's three more.
Yeah, right.
They dumped three more onto the pile.
There's almost too many, to be perfectly
yes.
honest. I look at a guy like a Dane Jackson, and I do wonder, like, man, he might have a hard time sticking on this
roster.
He might
be playing late in a preseason game, and you're like, I don't love that for him.
That might be it. That might be it. But, yeah, I mean, they've added to that room, so that makes me feel better. But, like, I've brought it up a few times now in the last few weeks since camp's gotten underway. But Micah Hyde was kind of always this perfect example for me.
Yes.
Like, Hyde multiple times made it known, I'm only playing in a, oh, my gosh, you know, break glass in case of emergency, you know, DEFCON 1 kind of deal.
Like, that's like all three of Rapp, Hamlin, and Bishop get hurt last year.
Yeah.
At the end of the year, it's like, okay, well,
you have to play now.
I'm a warm body that is signed on the Bills with a contract.
Exactly. And I didn't so, like I didn't like the constant feeling. It wasn't just callers. It wasn't just fans. It was that feeling that we all had of, like, any mistake Rapp or Hamlin made, and even Bishop when he was able to get in, of course we had the feeling of just go to Hyde. Just go to Hyde.
Like a comfort blanket.
Like a comfort blanket. It's that weighted blanket you put on to chill out your anxiety, right?
It's Jordan Phillips coming back every season and
mm-hmm. –
you know, you need defensive tackle depth. Why not this guy? He's been here.
Right.
And
sometimes it's
nothing
good.
Wrong with that.
Yeah, sometimes
Phillips,
it's good.
Phillips was one of the better performers in that AFC Championship game, oddly mm-hmm. enough. Him and Ed Oliver probably were the only ones that I was actually impressed with on the defensive line in that game. Including, but not limited to, that last play that he makes to force Kansas City to only be up by three.
Yeah, but I think, especially in the NFL, because they're such big rosters and the coaching staffs have gotten bigger, there is that the need for familiarity,
mm-hmm.
that you need to bring in people you know you've worked with before, and there's not at times this feeling of pushing forward, the progression of a franchise, of a team, what have you. So I really appreciated what this Bills draft was, which was, yeah, we maybe won't be going to those wells at defensive tackle or corner.
Defensively,
because we're
going to
bring in
over.
A ton. Yeah, we are starting over, and that was something I really, really appreciated.
And yet at the same time, even with that message, in come Trey White and Dane mm-hmm. Jackson.
But the feeling is a bit different of like, okay,
it's also,
but it's going to be hard now for guys like Dane Jackson to sit on the roster.
It's also, you don't want a secondary of entirely all kids.
Correct.
You needed a veteran presence. Tre'Davious White happened to be available, and you were not confident in Rasul Douglas anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, White looked good at the end of the season, including in the game against Baltimore in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for your sacrifice on that flag, Mr. Trey Day. We all appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.
That was totally not DPI.
I'll take it.
Again, we'll take it. Thank you for your service on that one. Here, come back.
Yep.
But it is, at the same time, like, you do need a veteran presence over there so that in case Benford is – if Benford's your quote-unquote vet guy – and then it's all like Harrison, Strong, Hancock, Ingram. Just a bunch of youth
mm-hmm.
there. Obviously, Taron Johnson at the nickel, but like Taron Johnson's a one of one.
Yeah, he does a different role kind of deal.
He does a different role, and he plays with a style that is unique because, you know, there's not a lot of players that have that frame
mm-hmm.
that succeed for as long of a career that Johnson has had in the secondary.
We'll see how this all works out for the Bills. 803-0550, the number to call.
Listen all this week, by the way, for your chance to win a pair of grandstand tickets to the NASCAR Cup Series weekend from Friday, August 8th to Sunday, August 10th at Watkins Glen International. The Go Bowling at the Glen brings drivers of the NASCAR Cup Series to battle it out at the historic New York Road Course. Tickets are on sale for the entire NASCAR weekend at theglen.com. We'll come back. Wrap things up here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. He's Zach Jones. I'm Derek Kramer. This is WGR. Welcome back, everyone. Quick final segment here as we get ready for Sabres Live coming up at 12 o'clock. You've been listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Is brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
And of course, by the way, all of this training camp coverage that we've been giving you, coverage of Bill's training camp from St. John Fisher University, that's brought to you by Fiegel, Carr, and Joyce, your border attorneys. By Outlet Liquor, when you need to stock up, it's the place to buy a case. What's your outlet? By Connors and Ferris, your workers' comp attorneys. And driven by your Upstate Honda dealers for great deals on the entire Honda lineup. Visit your Upstate Honda dealer today. Zach, I love when athletes are just like real and humble with themselves about things, and even more so when you even have a chance to fry yourself. Cordarrelle Patterson, who I did not know was in Pittsburgh, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
So there's your fun fact, everyone. Cordarrelle Patterson was on the training camp roster in Pittsburgh. Wait a minute, Derek, you just said was. Why is that?
Breaking news. Pittsburgh Steelers release old, washed-up Cordarrelle Patterson on his day off. That has been tweeted by Cordarrelle Patterson. I mean, he is old for a running back. He's 34.
Yeah. And especially for a running back receiver hybrid.
Yeah.
No less. But, man, here's something that I've learned in life. There's only one you, so be nice to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
This is not one of those instances.
No.
Like, this is, hey, I've had a great career. I've had a great run.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have some fun with this if this is the end.
If this is it.
If this is the end, let's at least have a little bit of fun with it with the fans and the followers and everything like that in the internet. Like, let's have some fun with it.
Or he genuinely could be better that they released him on his day off.
Or he knows that he's cooked.
Yeah. Yeah.
He either knows he's cooked or he's absolutely livid.
He's had a hell of a career, though, as a return man. Four-time first-team All-Pro, three-time second-team All-Pro, four-time Pro Bowler, two-time NFL kickoff returns leader. He did win a Super Bowl, I believe, with the Patriots. He has two NFL records, a 109-yard play, that's tie record, and the most kickoff return touchdowns with nine.
And impressively, rocks the number 84 on every team he was on.
Every single team, no matter what position he was lined up as, whether it be a receiver or running back, he wore 84.
So, by the way, he played 13 games for Pittsburgh last year. That's how much I knew about what happened with mm-hmm. Cordarrelle Patterson.
I think, again, he was mainly a kickoff guy.
But also it was like a bit of a career rejuvenation for him, though, too,
mm-hmm.
Heading to Chicago. Because in Minnesota, it was like, yeah, you're a bit of a flop, and nobody's really going to worry.
You're really just a return guy.
You're just a return guy. It was Chicago, but then Atlanta. It was that 3 years with the Falcons where he gets over 500 yards rushing in his first 2 years with the Falcons, over 600 yards each season, actually. 14 combined touchdowns, and his scrimmage yards, especially in 2021, 1,166 scrimmage yards. The man was having himself a hell of a season there at age 31.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, a lot of this came in what ultimately could end up being later in his career.
It's late in his career that he does as well as he does like this. And you just have to acknowledge the fact that, like, the return game, he was always good at that, though. In Minnesota, with Chicago, he did it less with Atlanta
because
he was running the football more as a running back.
Yeah, he was like actually part of their team.
But he made four All-Pros as a return man.
Mm-hmm.
And several Pro Bowls back when voting for those actually mattered. Cordarrelle Patterson has a hell of a career to him, really.
He also, by the way,
through 12 years.
First NFL player to have a 100-yard kickoff return touchdown, a 75-yard touchdown catch, and a 50-yard rushing touchdown in the same season, his rookie year in 2013.
It's wild.
He's exactly the player like he is, where it's total boom or bust. That's where you get the whole
you know, return guy and all this stuff, the Hester kind of comms.
It's
boomer bust.
Vikings fans obviously would have wanted a player to be a little bit more well-rounded with the 29th pick of a draft.
Yeah.
But he's had an interesting career, a little bit of a rejuvenation when he goes to running back. I'm glad he's having a little bit of fun with it, if it is the end, for example.
Mm-hmm.
But, that's a great tweet. And that's going to do it for us here today on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer, thanks for hanging out with us here. Coming up next, join Brian Duff and Marty Baron as Sabres Live is coming up with you here on WGR.
Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the misfits, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the biggest rule breakers in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about the wildest moments, toughest lessons, and why breaking the rules might just be the key to success. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.